Good evening. This is a wonderful thing you've just handed me. I have spent 30 years where I've had to even follow the upturn of a judge's brow, knowing when to stop, and to be given such a weapon this evening is wonderful. The only way this is going to work this evening with nine candidates here, or candidates' representatives, is unfortunately if we try and ensure time being kept to as rigorously as possible. I have to say, having been on the receiving end of judges for 30 years, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to do it in a different way. One of the things that has struck me is that we do very well in Northern Ireland at upsetting apple carts. We do less well at disagreeing well. So may tonight be a situation where candidates can put forward their views, but in Northern Ireland, maybe we learn better to disagree well. It does also briefly just remind me, before I ask Gavin to start, and in terms of the way in which I'm going to handle this tonight, I do recall, some of you will recall, the great Presbyterian theologian J.I. Packer, who I once heard speak in the United States. And somewhat unusually, he was chairing a meeting where an archbishop was speaking, and perhaps recognizing that he was slightly straying over the time, the archbishop said to J.I. Packer, "How long have I got?" And he said, Packer said, "Finish your sentence." So, so hopefully we won't get to that tonight. So, without further ado, I'm going to ask Gavin Robinson, who is former Lord Mayor of Belfast and who's here tonight representing the DUP. Unfortunately, Diane Dodds had to go to a vote in Europe, so I'm going to ask Gavin to take his 3 minutes.
Thank you very much, Brett, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is wonderful to be here with you all and to see such interest within European policy issues here at NOC. Can I apologise firstly for Diane? Diane is in Europe. But interestingly, if I were to tell you that Diane is involved in a discussion about CAP this evening within the European Parliament, the Common Agricultural Policy, I think it'll be interesting that I guess no one this evening knew that that was the item for debate in Europe. The European Parliament and European issues can all too easily be forgotten about, set aside apart from that five-year election cycle. The discussions, the considerations, the legislation does not get the attention it deserves here in Northern Ireland, because without question, there are huge impacts upon legislation and life in Northern Ireland emerging from the European Parliament. I should indicate that I'm slightly nervous when I see Brett's bell, because knowing the panel that are to my left, the bell is indeed made of glass, not brass, and there is a huge danger that it may fracture this evening. But I think it is important that through the course of the debate this evening that we get to have an honest, an open, and a rational discussion about what it is we expect to see from the European Union. It's all too easy to confine European parliamentary discussions, European parliamentary issues, to that of agriculture, although that is one of the main focuses you will hear. In East Belfast, we have three farms. And whilst we have an East Belfast Yacht Club down by the city airport, you'll not find too many fishermen. What you will find, though, is an incredible burden upon business and upon legislative life within the United Kingdom. Open Europe suggests that there is a cost every year of £30 million on business as a direct result of legislation emanating from Europe. You'll hear about financial implications this evening. You'll hear about the power that has been ceded from Northern Ireland, from the United Kingdom, to the European Union. Some of it you will consider worthwhile. None of it has given the attention it deserves, nor have you had the opportunity to have your say in generations. I'm a 29-year-old man. The last time that there was a say in the UK on whether we should be engaged with, get further involved with, or indeed leave the European Union was 10 years before my birth. If you were born in 1975 at the time of the referendum, that still isn't good enough. You have to be at least 57 or 58 years of age to have had a say in our involvement with the European Union. And there is an innate democratic deficit associated with are not having a say, are not having the involvement. Is that it? He is ruthless, and I'm sure you'll find that to your cost. Thank you very much indeed, and I look forward to expanding upon some of the points we're going to make during the course of the debate. Thank you.
Gavin, thank you, and I do hope we get, and we will make sure that we get an opportunity to expand upon some of the themes discussed. Without further ado, again, I'm going to ask our current MEP, Martina Anderson from Sinn Féin, to come and address us. Thank you, Martina.
Gori Miogat, Asin Curry, and Sean Ucht, thanks very much for the invitation to take part in tonight's event. It really is a privilege to be here. And it's timely and very appropriate that this gathering is on the same evening that the heads of state of Ireland and Britain, the Octoron Michael D. Higgins and Queen Elizabeth, are meeting in London for the first time. First Ministers Peter Robison and Martin McGuinness' attendance brings an all-Ireland dimension to the historic occasion, which is about building reconciliation among the people of Ireland and between the people of Ireland and Britain. I am an Irish Republican. I want to see an end to partition and a genuine process of reconciliation based on equality and tolerance. However, I also believe that Ireland's place, north and south, is in Europe, and Sinn Féin's role in the EU is to put Ireland first. That means bringing Ireland's voice against cuts in Europe, cuts for farmers, cuts in peace, and cuts in structural funds. It means working to get the ban lifted on the executive accessing funds from the European Investment Fund for infrastructural projects. Therefore, I am working to achieve a 1 billion euro stimulus package, which could, for instance, fund the A5 and A6 road schemes, the Nara Water Bridge, the Desert Crete Police and Fire Training College, and a new children's hospital, all of which would create jobs. It means supporting our farmers through our commitment to a fair common agricultural policy and backing the single region model, which creates a level playing field for small and big farmers alike. As MEP, I pledge to bring you to Europe and Europe to you. I have hosted SMEs, farmers, GAA, rugby, soccer, and many other organizations in Brussels to open up an EU funding opportunities. I, for instance, have fought for Peace Corps funding and for regional aid to be applied to the north. I have visited all areas explaining big competitive funding opportunities which do exist in Europe, and I recently launched a gateway to EU funding. I have worked to control the sale of tobacco products to prevent children from starting the deadly habit of smoking. I am one of four candidates of Sinn Féin in running in the European election, a team of four Sinn Féin MEPs that will put Ireland first. Go Míle maith agaibh go léir. Thank you.
Thank you, Martina. Next is someone who's no stranger to many of you here, is Lord Empey, who's a member of the House of Lords, lifelong unionist, and representing tonight the Ulster Unionist Party. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Brett. I'd like to apologise for Jim Nicholson. He's his group coordinator on the Agriculture Committee, and there's a big meeting tomorrow. You may or may not be aware that MEPs remain MEPs until July of this year, so it's different from Westminster. After the election, they still continue to the summer, so the work of the Parliament continues. The Ulster Unionist Party is firmly pledged to promote and maintain the Union, and we believe that that is the best economic, social and political framework within which that Northern Ireland can operate. And we believe that the relationship between Europe and here is the relationship between the nation state and Brussels. And we firmly believe that that should be our fundamental position. We believe in the three R's, that currently we need to review our relationship with the European Union. As Gavin has said, it is a long time since we joined, when we had 6 countries that were relatively compatible. Now we have 28 countries with huge differences between them. In Romania, the minimum wage is 83 pence. So you can see the huge differences that there now are. We believe we should renegotiate. For instance, is it realistic to have vast movements of population uncontrollable, which is the position that we currently have? And we believe very firmly that there should be a referendum and people have their say. But Europe is much underestimated. The air that we breathe, the water that we drink, and the food that we eat is all governed in very large measure by Europe. So it's vitally important that we have a say and we can make connections in Brussels with other groups. I served for 8 years in the Committee of the Regions in Brussels, and it's a minor institution, but it gave me some idea of the extent to which our lives are actually controlled by Europe. So while most people aren't interested in euro elections, and in GB generally there's a turnout of about 20%, I think it is vitally important. One good thing Brussels has done for us was the peace funds. And I must pay tribute to Ian Paisley, John Hume and Jim Nicholson, who negotiated that many years ago. And that has brought a lot of money to Northern Ireland, and there's now going to be a peace four, which will come in the next session. And that is giving money, hopefully, to help us bridge the gaps in our community, improve our community relations, and ensure that our younger generation does not grow up to make the mistakes that we made. We must also remember, with Mr. Putin flexing his muscles, acting like Hitler did in the 1930s by threatening to invade parts of Ukraine, that is a circumstances where Europe can play a role by bringing countries together. Remember, Germany and France destroyed each other during the 20th century. It's important that we don't make the same mistakes again. So therefore, I believe it's vitally important that everybody plays a full part and takes a keen interest in European affairs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lord MP. Next, we have, again, a former minister in the Northern Ireland Executive representing the SDLP. Again, lifelong involvement in politics is Alex Atwood from the SDLP, who is the candidate for the election this year. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Brett, and good evening, everybody. My view is that we are at a pivotal time in the history of Northern Ireland, these islands, and of Europe, because there is 4 elections in the next 2 years. And in each and all of those elections, we have the opportunity to reshape our politics for the better through democratic participation, by voting, so that politics in Northern Ireland, these islands, and Europe is better going forward than it has been. Martina referred to the speeches that are being made at Windsor Castle as I speak. None of us know what has been said, but the story will be that history was made, that Queen Elizabeth and President of Ireland took the opportunity to reshape our politics in a positive way. And that's what the election on the 22nd of May and next year and the following year is about. It is about taking the opportunity to reshape our politics in a better way. It is about embedding in the lives of our citizens and the politics of our country the values that can bring us forward in a better way. And that the election on the 22nd of May and in the coming 2 years is to concede no ground to the naysayers when it comes to Europe, and to concede no ground to those who seek to degrade our politics further than we have seen in recent times in Northern Ireland. That's what this time is about. and that how people vote on the 22nd of May will or will not reshape our politics for the better, will or will not see our politics degrade for the worse, and will or will not see us play our full and positive role in Europe. I want to make it very clear. If there was a referendum on Europe today, I would vote to stay in, and I'd do the same tomorrow, and I'll do the same in 2016 or 17 if a referendum arises. Because if we do not stay in Europe, then people in this room, the businessmen in Ballyhackamore, the farmers and all the other people who work so well for the people of Northern Ireland, they will be the people, all of us, who will suffer the most of any people in these islands. We have to be firmly for Europe, even though we may be critical of it. And in that moment, we have to be very clear-headed, come the 22nd of May, that we need strength in Europe, not the weakness of those who would pull us out. I believe that when it comes to the candidates, I bring strength, because I am a reputation, if anything, for being tough, for being decisive, for being effective. And whether it is the politics of the North going forward or the politics in Europe, I believe that is what is needed.
Well, our next candidate is Anna Lowe from the Alliance Party, an MLA for South Belfast, and the party's European candidate for this particular election. So, Anna, you're very welcome.
Good evening, everyone. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for inviting me. Alliance is pro-Europe. It makes sense that we belong to a massive common market of 500 million people with an economy worth £730 billion. Nearly 90,000 jobs here are dependent on the EU, and half of our trade is within the EU. The EU has invested in Northern Ireland through various funding programmes to improve our agriculture, infrastructure, education, research, environment, and sustainable development. Let's not forget that since 1995, the EU has contributed €2 billion towards peace and reconciliation. Where would we be without it? The EU has also been a framework within which Britain and Ireland have worked together more closely than at any other time. We need to be careful about suggesting the UK leaving the EU. The consequences for us politically, economically, and culturally could be disastrous. Even talking about it creates uncertainties in the business sector. Having been chair of the Environment Committee since 2011 and a member of the All-Party Group on European Legislation, I have seen firsthand how European directives help to enhance our environmental protection, road safety, and waste management. In terms of crime, as the founding chair of the All-Party Group on Human Trafficking, I got an opportunity to be involved in the EU Parliamentarian Anti-Trafficking Network, which highlighted for me the value of Europe-wide cooperation to tackle crime. Northern Ireland needs a credible European candidate who will work for the best interests of our society as a whole. Alliance is the only main Northern Ireland party that represents everyone. I present a progressive, inclusive image of Northern Ireland in Europe. As in Westminster and the Assembly, Alliance will continue to strive for transparency and openness in Europe with less bureaucracy and red tape. Northern Ireland has a tendency to be insular. We need to turn Northern Ireland into an outward and open-minded place, ready to play a bigger role in world affairs. We have a skillful workforce three wonderful universities, and a thriving agri-food industry, lots of creative ways. We have lots to offer Europe and the world. I'm ambitious and positive for the role that the EU can play in Northern Ireland and the role that an alliance MEP can play in the EU. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Next, I'm going to invite Tina McKenzie, who is the representative of NI21, a new party who have two MLAs at present. And Tina is a new candidate standing for the first time in this year's election. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Brett. Thanks, everyone, for having us here today. And I'd also like to take the opportunity, I haven't heard anyone do it, and this is the second hustings, to thank the MEPs for the work that they've done for Northern Ireland for the last 5 years. I know we've only got one here tonight, but that goes to all three of them. We're in a church, and it's quite significant that in a church, no matter what the name on the door, there is always hope within a church. And I had some very kind words tonight from the person who leads this church. Northern Ireland needs hope more than at any other time in its history, I believe. You've heard from some of our top representatives, and I believe that sometimes we don't just lack hope, we also lack positivity, and we certainly lack leadership. It's not all bad news. There's actually quite a lot of good news out there. There's a lot of hope in our communities. There's a lot of people, probably a lot of people in this room, every day doing good things for the sake of Northern Ireland. What can Europe do for us? Well, first and foremost, Europe is an example to Northern Ireland. Sir Reg did quite rightly discuss the fact that Germany and France went to war. After the bloodiest war, the most horrid of times, families against families, 7 years after the end of the Second World War, Europe stood up together and realised the only way to build a future together would be to have one common vision. You might call it a common identity, but still not giving up their own national identities. Northern Ireland is at a standstill. It is going nowhere, and we all know it. We can blame our politicians, we can blame Stormont, but first we must look at ourselves and ask the question, what can we do? I was like all of you. I have never been involved in politics. I have never been a member of a party. But somewhere within all of us and everyone sitting here tonight, you know you have a responsibility. I have it for my children, and I'm sure you have it for yours. So tonight, it is not all dull. Fresh politics is being born across Northern Ireland. It might be small, it might be quiet, but actually, the younger generations give us hope. If you look at the Life and Times survey in Northern Ireland, you'll find that nearly 30% of people feel okay with saying they're Northern Irish. There's hope. We're going to build a new future. NI21 believes in Europe. We believe that in Europe we can export more goods and services. We certainly need that. We can get more investment in. But we need MEPs that work together. When you're in business, you don't go into a room and ask for investment and fight among your team. You get together and you say, what can we do together? Let's put our differences behind us and get the best deal for Northern Ireland. I would like to represent Northern Ireland, but I would like to represent everyone. A Northern Ireland that is part of a stronger, more diverse United Kingdom. I'm not ashamed of that, actually. A Northern Ireland that builds better relationships within the island of Ireland. And a Northern Ireland that takes its place within Europe, not on its knees for peace money, although, thank you, we'll take what we can get, but as a solid player in the European market, because Northern Ireland was once great, it can be great again. Thank you.
Next, I'm going to ask the Ross Brown from the Green Party. Presently have one MLA in the Assembly, and Ross is here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, everybody, for the offer to speak here today. I'm here representing the Green Party, a party with 48 MEPs already in the European Parliament, a party that is big in Europe. I belong to a party which operates effectively on a transnational basis. While others tonight will be here expecting you to vote for them on the basis of their identity, as a young person representing the next generation, and a party where identity is not an issue, I'm asking you to vote for me because of our ideas. The Green Party is strongly supportive of the principle of the European Union. We see the value of working together in a democratic framework to solve international problems like corporate tax avoidance, overfishing, or financial market regulation. We see the value for international relations that an international democratic decision-making framework creates. And as a party, we are supportive of the principles of solidarity and ensuring that those with more help those in less fortunate circumstances. But while we are strongly supportive of the EU in principle, we are deeply unhappy with the direction which it has taken. Deregulation, the financial crisis, and the imposition of collective austerity has threatened or destroyed many hard-won social, democratic, and economic achievements. And we are now faced with a growing sense of frustration, fear, and even anger. Today, 25% of Europeans are at risk of poverty or social exclusion. 27 million are unemployed, including almost 1 in 5 young Europeans. As an economist, I understand that sometimes tough choices have to be made, but I also understand that the collective imposition of austerity to get us out of debt was the equivalent of digging ourselves out of a hole. Alongside this, my generation is facing an unprecedented environmental crisis, which is already having the most serious impact on the poorest, most vulnerable people in the world. Whether we look at biodiversity loss with the extinction of 200 species per day, deforestation with the loss of 1.5 acres of rainforest every second, or greenhouse gas emissions and runaway climate change, this generation of policymakers have failed to make our economy sustainable. As a European party, we've put together a common EU-wide manifesto and policies outlining our vision and how we would change Europe, and I was privileged to be part of that select team. Europe is essential for building the more sustainable, democratic and equal society we're calling for. Taming the forces of financial markets and of global corporations, effectively fighting tax fraud and evasion, transforming Europe's energy to combat runaway climate change. These are all examples of ways that we want to change Europe that are beyond the capabilities of even the largest of our member states. Tonight I'm asking you to put aside your identity politics and leave them at the door. Your European representatives will be voting on issues like international trade, nuclear weapons proliferation and digital rights that affect not only the lives of everyone in the UK and Ireland, but the lives of hundreds of millions of peoples all over the world as well. And these are issues that are too important to ignore. I promise, as an elected representative, to bring a new style of politics to Northern Ireland, to leave the sectarian baggage behind and to work in the interests of everyone and in the interests of the common good. Thank you.
Now, next is Henry Riley from UKIP. Henry hails from Kilkeel, is very well known down there, so you're very welcome, and we look forward to hearing from what you have to say, Henry.
Mr. Chairman, as I stand in this Presbyterian Hall meeting house, I think of Calvin and the Reformed tradition and theology of Presbyterianism that give us freedom of conscience, personal liberty, and a system of governance that puts democracy at the very core of our lives. It was this same Judeo-Christian theology and ideology that became enshrined in our constitution and give us the British way of life that these British Isles have enjoyed for centuries. It is therefore ironic that we meet in this Presbyterian meeting hall to debate the European Union. The EU is the polar opposite of Presbyterianism, in that it is a dictatorial and exclusive entity that despises democracy. Within the last few weeks, we have heard the prominent EU Commissioner Viviane Reding openly state that we need to build the United States of Europe with the Commission as its government. Imagine that. This despite the fact that all recent opinion polls conducted in the United Kingdom have clearly stated that the people of this country want to leave the European Union or have it dramatically reformed. No one, apart from a few delusional Europhiles, really want more integration into the EU. UKIP believes that the European Union, with its one-size-fits-all system of government, is bad for Europe, and especially bad for us. We have effectively surrendered our right to democratic government. We now have an unelected EU Commission that meets in secret and makes 75% of our laws. Yes, we can have a semblance of democracy in Westminster and the Assembly, but the simple fact is that all our elected politicians can do is transpose EU directives into UK law. We have no alternative but to go along with them. Our membership of the European Union has brought us little benefit apart from well-paid positions for our political elite and their entourages. Yes, we have local micro schemes and peace initiatives that will throw so-called money at local communities, but all it does is give a few fixed-term contracts to a small number of workers and provide short-term fixes for communities that are once again left to fend for themselves when the money supply dries up. But the EU has, ladies and gentlemen, inflicted us with uncontrolled immigration that is destabilising mostly working-class areas and reducing wages and working conditions for UK workers. The EU has damaged our NHS through its Working Time Directive, as well as damaging our competitiveness in the international stage, as it has already done with our fishing industry. The EU has, through its environmental legislation, increased home heating costs and inflicted massive levels of fuel poverty on our most vulnerable citizens. It has also driven up energy costs for industry to such a degree that it is driving our jobs abroad. We now have the absurdity that our so-called green laws are driving manufacturing plants to China and India, where they are commissioning three dirty coal-fired power stations every week. Leaving the EU would save our taxpayers billions of pounds. It will free up this great nation to create more jobs, control our borders, stop the mass immigration that's causing so much harm, give our people cheaper energy and food, and allow us to make our own laws. The EU is irreformable and we must leave. We cannot be dictated to by this unbureaucratic monster that is the European Union. Thank you.
And last, by no means least, is Erwin Armstrong from the Northern Ireland Conservative Party.
Lords, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to be here this evening. I am co-chair of the Northern Ireland Conservatives, along with Trevor England, who I think many of you will know. And I'm here representing Mark Brotherstone this evening, who had to be in London, and no, he's not at that banquet. You know, I may not be an exact replacement for Mark, because Mark is, for those of you who know him, is slim, fit, and a little follically challenged, and I don't qualify on any of those grounds, unfortunately. However, I know Mark is passionate about economic matters and job creation in Northern Ireland, and he's extremely well qualified to talk on the subject. He's a graduate in business economics. He has a PhD in social entrepreneurship, and he's currently a director of enterprise development at the Argyle Centre, and in his spare time, he does some teaching development work in the MET, so he has a very, very strong background. He would like me to stress that his focus in Northern Ireland is in jobs, not in an abstract way by saying we must get employment down or we must do this, but with concrete targets over the coming years, such as a target of 4% unemployment, which is usually accepted as full employment, and an increase in the private share of the jobs market to 60%, where it's currently probably around 30%. Those are serious targets, and if everybody focuses their mind on achieving those things, we will move forward. But I think the question here tonight, how can Europe help us to reach those targets? That is the key thing. They can do that by continuing to support our agricultural and agri-food sectors, by investing in infrastructure projects, by offering us export markets that do not require additional regulation, by investing in peace projects and providing funds to train young, undereducated people. At the same time, they need to stop interfering in much of what we do in the UK and allow businesses to go on with what they are good at, i.e. investing to make money and employing and training people. That is what a business exists to do. Mark is also focused on an NI with equal opportunity for all, and one which recognises diversity and at the same time the common cultures all sections of society can support. I think that tremendous performance on Friday night from a 14-man Ulster team and their 15th man in the crowd is an example of that common culture that we have now. Mark himself is a classic example of what is possible in Northern Ireland. His parents come from East Belfast and West Belfast, so he has close links to all communities. The Northern Ireland Conservatives are part of the national family, but with local focus. We are the only centre-right party in these elections. There is no other centre-right party. There are parts of other parties which may be centre-right. But we believe that We should have smaller government, less interference in people's lives, but with timely support for those in the community who need it. However, not for those who abuse the system that is, after all, paid for by taxpayers. Thank you.
Well, can I thank on your behalf all of the contributors, because they did really quite religiously keep to their time limit, and we're grateful for that. Again, the idea would be that as I'm asking a number of questions, but I think we're going to do it simply. I'm going to ask certain individuals to deal with certain questions. Apologies if I will do my best to be equitable. Can I also say to the audience that we already have quite a number of questions, and we would welcome more that you can simply, some will be round to collect. If, having heard various contributions, you feel that there is a salient question, do feel free to bring it up here. I think the best way to proceed is that I simply try and take some of the questions that have been put and put them to a number of candidates. Now, I'm going to start with one of my own. I'm going to cheat because one of the things that, in fact, Tina mentioned, in fact, to some extent, Reg as well, was the foundation of the EU. It's not often heard about, and the question I have is, how relevant do you think the foundation principles of the EU, which were predicated, to some extent at least, on the idea of preventing war in Europe, are still relevant today? I'm going to ask Henry Reilly to start on that one.
Well, if you go back to the founding of the European Union, the European Union itself will try and give this perception that it was founded to stop future wars. Now, there was always traditional animosities between Germany and France, but it didn't need the degree of integration that we have now. The NATO was formed after World War II to protect the European peace. If you actually go back to the people who actually did found the European Union, you will find people who were actually very senior in the Nazi movement in Germany. And there are many excellent papers that you can read and research that will show some very actual sinister foundations to the EU. And if you even look at Barroso and Van Rompuy to this present day, they talk about building the European empire, reasserting Europe's will on the rest of the world, and this type of thing. That's not what Britain has ever been about. We've been a trading nation that sells its wares across the world. We have actually very little in common with the rest of Europe in comparison to the likes of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, India, all the big emerging trading blocs that are thriving, while the European hulk starts to decline, gone from 40% of European or world GDP down to 18% and further decline.
Thank you.
So we have nothing to learn. We owe the European Union nothing, and they certainly didn't give us peace.
All right. Gavin Robinson.
Thank you for that. I'm not sure I entirely agree with all of what Henry had to say. I think it is important to recognise that there have been many benefits associated with not only the European Union, but essentially the European Economic Community. Something that I think there was widespread support for within the United Kingdom, and widespread benefits. And you've heard some of the benefits mentioned in the preceding comments from other panel members. But I don't think anyone nowadays would disagree with the benefits of the common market or the ability for free movement of people. It's the growth of the European Union. It's the assumed powers that have been continually piled one upon the other without the ability for you to have your say. And that's why I think it is hugely important that we don't only have a rational consideration of what Europe does for us now, but should it? Should we as a national country, as a member state of the European Union, not have control of our own affairs? The European Union, for example, has just established a European External Action Force. We didn't ask for it. You'll find 3,000 civil servants there working for one of the 28 unelected commissioners who are going out and about around the world representing your views without asking you what they are, without asking our government whether the foreign policy that has been agreed at a European level is the view that our country takes.
Thanks,
and
Gavin.
So I think that's the way in which we have I'll frame my answer to that question. I think we need to clearly look at what Europe does now, recognise that I don't think we are going to see a World War III in a European context,
again. Recognise that there are some benefits, but recognise that there needs to be a full, proper and rational analysis of
what it does. Okay, thank you, Gavin. Alex Atwood.
The first and obvious point is that the biggest parallel between where Europe has gone over the last decades and where we are following the last decades is that the ethics of the European Union, its values, are about sharing and integration and partnership. And that whilst people may differ about the character and nature of all that, is what has happened in Europe since the World War, Second World War, not testimony to the courage and daring of European leaders who said after the horrors of the two wars in the last century that the ethics of sharing, integration and partnership and accommodation were the values that would sustain us into the future. And that's relevant ever more so in this city and in this part of Ireland. And secondly, if you look around the world, more and more countries are gathering in economic zones. The BRIC countries now have cooperation between the BRIC countries in order to maximise their trade and commercial power in the world. And you will see the same now emerge in respect of the MINT countries, Mexico, Indonesia, Nigeria and Turkey, who will more and more gather themselves in order to punch their weight in the global market. So let's be very clear. Economic zones and integration maximise opportunities. And let's not put that in jeopardy, whatever our differences might be around the power and the balance of power within the European institutions and between the partner states of the European Union.
Okay, thank you, Alex. We've strayed very quickly onto economics. But let me ask one of the questions here, which I thought was very good. Martina, in what ways, if any, has your party changed its policies and tactics since the last Euro election? In short, are we going to have the equivalent of political Groundhog Day without the happy ending? That's a complicated question, but I think, okay. Has there been a change?
Well, I think our party's position has been very consistent since we have been elected to Europe. I think we have had a critical engagement, which has meant that we have assessed every decision that has been made in Europe as to whether it has been of benefit to you or not. And that remains our position. The founding principles of Europe around peace, prosperity, and solidarity are principles that we have very much signed up to. We also are critical of Europe around austerity, the fact that 2,000 people are leaving Ireland every week as a consequence. And whilst the North may not have been affected like the South, it certainly has not been sheltered. And we can see that by the implications of NAMA. So what I would say to you that our principles and our position, we are very clear that Ireland, North and South, should be in Europe. We would like a reformed Europe. We would like to deal with the Commission and the Council and the changes that are necessary there. But we also see the benefits, and I would just like to finish by reminding, because there were some, I thought, maybe throwaway comments with regards to peace funding. And it's important for us to remind ourselves that from 1995 to 2006, because we haven't been able to calculate the last funding round, there's been $2 billion that has been accrued in peace funding for 22,000 projects here in the North, 900,000 participants, 43,000 people went through reconciliation, and there were 78,000 jobs. Now, that was only for Peace 1 and Peace 2. We haven't calculated Peace 3 yet, and we still have Peace 4.
Okay. Thank you, Martina. Reg MP.
Well, first of all, I think any of us who saw the survey earlier this week of the attitudes of our young people we have to be very concerned about that. And one of the themes of tonight's event is what role can Europe play, particularly as it applies to reconciliation and giving those young people the hope. But you've got to give the young people the skills, and as a former skills minister, I know a little about that. You've also got to provide the jobs, otherwise people will leave. So we're in a position where our young people are without that hope. Europe can contribute, but unfortunately the original model that the Founding Fathers formed after the Second World War, which was supported by people like Winston Churchill, has been corrupted by people who want to superimpose a super state on top of the nation states. And that's where Europe's lost its way, which is why it has to be renegotiated and why the people have to be given a say. But we can't sit idly by and have something like 2 out of 3 of our young people saying they want to get out of here. And that is really something that frightens me, because they are the future. They are the skill base of the future. They are the wealth creators of the future. And if they're not here, who is going to create the wealth?
Thank you. Now, moving on. Do you support giving the people a say in whether we should remain in the EU? Anna Lowe.
Very much so, as I said in my introduction. We very much need to stay in Europe. And it would be crazy for us to get out of Europe. It's a massive common market for us.
Do you think we should have a referendum? But
We certainly don't support a referendum at the moment. I think just talking about the referendum frightens people away who might want to invest in Northern Ireland, might want to invest in the UK. It makes people nervous. So I don't think it's a good idea even to talk about it. We need to be in Europe really to get the maximum benefits out of Europe. Rach talked about young people. There is a programme, a new programme coming from 2014 to 2020, called Horizon 2020. It's worth 80 billion euros. And that can be used to help us to enhance skills and training for our young people and helping them to go to Europe to get apprenticeship. Those things we need to fight for. And those things are what we need to help our young people to get their qualifications, to get job opportunities here in Northern Ireland and outside of Northern Ireland. We don't mind them going outside of Northern Ireland. We want them to come back. I'm a victim, I'm afraid, of brain drain with 2 sons leaving me at 18 and never return. I certainly want to see lots of high-value jobs here in Northern Ireland for our young people to stay here to help us build a society for all, a prosperous society, rather than for them to be thinking they are going to go as far as they can. I mean, like, I think it was yesterday's newspaper saying lots of them want to go to Australia, New Zealand and other places. We want them to stay here because we invest in them, you know, so much for years of education. We don't want them then, after they got the qualification, go somewhere else.
Thank you, Anna. Tina McKenzie.
And we don't specifically have a problem with a referendum. We're very clear that there are benefits for Northern Ireland to remain within the European Union. I'm a business person, so I'll talk to you in terms of the numbers. The European Union represents 20% of all GDP. It is the single largest market in the world. It is 27% in real figures of the world's total output. I'll go through the numbers with you after, Henry. I know them very well. For Northern Ireland, what we don't do is we do not maximise our opportunities within Europe. So whilst we're having a debate, what I would like to see from the United Kingdom, if we decide to have the referendum, I would like to see it done in an informed way. There's much rhetoric, a bit like Northern Ireland, I have to say. Lots of rhetoric, lots of blowing around and shouting about with little fact. So let's focus on the facts of what Europe can do for a little Northern Ireland, because no man is an island, and certainly Northern Ireland needs all the friends it can get. Now, within Northern Ireland, we actually are performing pretty poorly in Europe. If I compare the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, we currently achieve £35 per head on the funding compared to £595 in the Republic of Ireland. We need to do a better job. Equally, if you look at what's going on within trade in Northern Ireland, we're exporting to the whole of the European Union half of what we're exporting to the world. So we are exporting to GB 8 billion. To the European Union, we're just doing over one. I'm reminding you that I said that the European Union is the biggest market. It is worth $16 trillion, and we are not getting our slice of that. It goes back to the original point. Northern Ireland needs to become part of that competitive knowledge economy. Get within the 21st century and move on.
Thank you, Tina. I am always amazed and admiring of the manner in which, with great ingenuity, the contributors all manage to say what they want and then pay some lip service to the question, but it's impressive. My son, who is studying A-level politics, I see here with his teacher this evening, will also give me a fairly unfiltered view at the end as to all of your contributions, good as they all have been. What alliances have or will the parties forge in Europe to strengthen their position and that of Northern Ireland? Erwin Armstrong. What alliances have or will the parties forge in Europe to strengthen their position and that of Northern Ireland?
Well, I think if we look at the Northern Ireland context, If we look at the Northern Ireland context, we have three parties here who always seem to be disagreeing within Northern Ireland, but thankfully they seem to agree whenever they leave these shores, which I think is a great thing. Yeah. It's a pity they didn't do it a bit more when they're actually here. So there are many alliances, as we know, across Europe in different groupings. My own party is in one particular grouping. And they are all looking towards different things. And I think one of the earlier questions, which is very central to Conservatives, is about referenda. And I think David Cameron is actually managing to persuade a lot of different groups within the European Union that where they are at the minute is not where they should be. I know my company trades across Europe, and we also trade in North America. And let me tell you, it's easier in North America than it is across the multi-languages and the multi-levels of regulation. You know, we pretend we have regulation across the European Union. We actually don't have a settled regulation. Every country takes the European directive and changes them. So every country we go to, it's different. We go to America, one big national block which works together, and it's much easier. So, you know, to talk about Europe as being the be-all and end-all of trading, not right. America, Canada, much, much easier to do business in. So whenever we look at alliances within Europe, the alliance that everybody needs within Europe is to actually stop the corruption, stop the fact that the books haven't been passed as audited for, I think, 10, 15 years, and nobody does anything about it. It's largely run by unelected people. We need to start to change all those things. And it's only when the politicians actually take on the civil servants that we might actually see some change within Europe. So my position is very simply, I'm all for a referendum. And I want to see a negotiation before that referendum. And I think politicians should never put themselves above the electorate. They should always say, the electorate knows better than us. The attitude that, well, they don't know enough, so they can't vote. I don't agree with that. The electorate should always have the power over the politicians. Thank you.
Thank you. Ross Bryan.
Hello.